I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Hour two is underway, 11 a.m. Thanks for joining us on Grant and Danny. We're going blitzing at noon. Candace Buckner will break down the Wizards-Raptors game two tomorrow with us. Look back at game one at 1 o'clock in 2 hours. Coming up in 15 minutes, Redskins hosting Daron Payne, Darius Geis today. Who would you rather have? What's the bigger need, D-line or running back? But Neil Greenberg is on the Mattress Warehouse hotline. Nobody crunches numbers better when it comes to the Caps and hockey than him. You listen to him on Crashing the Net with Tom Daly here on 106.7 The Fan. Neil, if I was to tell you before the game the Caps would rip off a plus 20 shot advantage, almost double up the Jackets in shots, they would be 17-5 in high danger area opportunities, and they would lead them in every category and have a much better opportunity on the power play, almost 2-1. I don't know that there's any metric that would have pointed to a loss, but here we are.
No, I wouldn't have predicted a loss in that scenario in any way. And you and I were watching the game together and just saw this team, you know, absolutely dominating at times, right? First and third period, and then just completely unraveling at times as well. This is a difficult team. I remember being on your show before the playoffs started, and I kept saying how difficult it was for me to quantify what we were going to expect in the playoffs. And not that I expected this, but I'm not surprised that their inconsistencies has carried over from the regular season.
Neil, here's where I thought it would go awry. I thought it would be some of their toughness in front of the net, getting one of those early goals, and the Caps wouldn't be able to break through. Instead, what's happened is Columbus's offense, which we thought was challenged, it's just racking up comeback goals. They're putting 4 and 5 goals on the damn board. I didn't think that was how this was going to go. I agreed with it. It was going to be a dogfight and really, really challenging for this Caps club because the strength of Columbus, I thought, would take advantage of the weakness of the Capitals, which is defensemen in and around the net. But goodness gracious, the firepower all of a sudden. How is this happening?
Well, I think it's the Columbus Blue Jackets are probably better than people gave them credit for. I mean, the top line is very good with Panarin and Cam Atkinson. And, you know, last night I said the guy that worries me in this game is Cam Atkinson because I think that they know what Panarin could do now and they're going to try to focus to stop him. And Atkinson ended up having a 2-goal night. But also, this is a very well-coached team. I know people dislike John Tortorella because of his antics, but he's a good coach, and he's a disciplined coach, and he gets his teams ready. And you look at the discipline for Columbus, their penalty differential, meaning the difference between the penalties drawn and taken, was the 11th best in the NHL, and the Washington Capitals were 28th best. So I'm not surprised necessarily that Columbus is playing the more discipline in the hockey. I'm not surprised that Columbus can keep up with the Capitals. What I am surprised with, like you, is this team now has two-goal leads with home ice advantage and can't shut the door on either of them. And that, to me, obviously is a huge problem. And I think a lot of it stems not just so much from the penalties, the bonehead penalties that they've been taking, but at even strength, this has not been a good Washington team, and they haven't been able to secure a lead because of it.
The Caps were down 2-0 after two home losses in 2009 to the New York Rangers, and they ended up winning the series in 7. We've seen them come back from this before. What do the numbers tell us? How dead in the water are they going to Columbus?
Well, it's tough, and I think the injury to Burakovsky hurts perhaps more than people think. I mean, you look at how that second line of Backstrom, Oshie, and Burakovsky has performed during the regular season. They outscored opponents 12-5 at even strength. With just Backstrom and Burakovsky on the ice with any other forward, they outscored them 9-0, which is huge. You take Burakovsky away from Backstrom and Oshie, and they're outscored 5-8. So, and putting Vaughn up there isn't going to be enough to make up the difference. So this is just it's not good. I don't know what other words to use. I mean, I hate being negative, but it's not good. The outlook, the prognosis, negative. I mean, this is it's a dreadful spot to be in, going 0-2 into the other team's barn, banged up, goaltending situation in flux. Just this is probably the worst possible scenario Washington could find themselves in this early in the postseason.
Neil, you know very well from all the shows we do together, and you can check out Neil Greenberg with me post-game occasionally on NBC Sports Washington. You know him from the Washington Post and here on 106.7 The Fan. I love Tom Wilson. He has had a brutal series through two games. He's had two terrible penalties that have led to game-tying power play goals for Columbus. You know he doesn't have a shot on net right now? What is going on with him on the top line?
He's just not – this is part of the issue. They're not generating chances at even strength. And, you know, it's not just Wilson. You look at Ovechkin, yeah, he's got the power play tallies, but nothing at even strength. John Carlson, MIA at even strength. The only guy that's really doing anything is Lars Eller. And let's face it, you don't want him being the guy that's out there creating your scoring chances for you at the top of the team. So, yeah, Tom Wilson, it's really baffling to me because he turned his whole season around. His whole career trajectory changed this year in November when he was put on the top line with Ovechkin and Backstrom and made a play to stay there. He was playing great. He wasn't a passenger on that line. He was creating chances. He was creating space. He wasn't fighting. He was doing everything that you'd want a guy in that position to do. And then none of it's carrying over in the playoffs. And to me, that's just a lack of discipline. That's just a mental breakdown, because it's not like he forgot how to create chances in the NHL. It's not like he forgot to do what he did during the regular season to be successful. Either Columbus is doing a terrific job neutralizing him, which I don't see to be the case, or for whatever reason, they're just not getting the job done. And I think that, to me, if I'm a Caps fan, that to me is the most distressing part of this whole thing. Because you've seen this team have regular season success time and time again, and you can only change so much and pull so many levers at this point that the front office is out of levers, the coaching staff is out of levers, there's no magic genie coming to save them, there's no Willis Reed coming out of the Zamboni tunnel to help this team. This core is flawed, and I think that it's time that we need to accept that, because the results are always the same, and there's a few players on the team that are part of the core. And I said this on the show last night. I'm not saying that Alex Ovechkin is not a superstar. I'm not saying Nicholas Backstrom is not a superstar. But just them together in this situation is not working. And that needs to be addressed, because you've changed literally everything else around them, from the coaching staff to the assistant coaches to the players, the auxiliary players, everything. And it's still not working. In fact, you can argue it might be getting worse.
At N. Greenberg on Twitter, our buddy Neil Greenberg joins us from the Mattress Warehouse Hotline. That goes to my question here. Neil, they've changed coaches, you've alluded to. They've also changed playing styles multiple times after that loss to Montreal. To me, this is a great process. They did everything right, with the exception of the Philip Forsberg trade, which I'll never forget, but whatever. They did everything right. Now, here we are, beating our head against the wall. Your colleague Dan Steinberg went through this and chronicled it. The quotes are the same. The results are the same. They outshot their opponent. They found a way to lose, whatever, whatever. To me, this is I'm not mad at anybody. Let's start anew. Let's trade away whoever we can trade away, because they've got some albatross contracts now, whether it's Oshie's, Evgeny Kuznetsov's, Braden Holtby's, etc. I think they need to break it down and start again. Is that a crazy thought, or should they keep plugging away?
No, I don't think it's a crazy thought. It's a terrible position, because Who are you going to get rid of, right? So let's say, for argument's sake, you trade Nick Backstrom. Well, now you have a hole in second-line center again, assuming you move Evgeny Kuznetsov up, because you can't find these level of talent anymore in the NHL. They're being locked up earlier and earlier, younger and younger, longer term. So it's very difficult to find a guy like a Nicholas Backstrom, especially on the contract that he's on. So that's almost a non-starter. Maybe if John Carlson goes, I mean, that's a huge hole in the defensive pairing to fill up. I'm not sure that that's available in free agency. And then we can talk about the nuclear option, which is trading Alex Ovechkin. And sure, there's a lot of people out there that say, well, just trade him and everything will be fine. But I mean, how are you going to, one, you can't make up the value that he provides even at this age. I mean, he's a 50-goal scorer, 49-goal scorer. They don't grow on trees, especially not after the age of 30. And you can't possibly get enough value back for him at this point to make it worth the while to trade him. So I really think that the organization has boxed themselves in an unenviable position, because they don't have the value, they don't have the assets to do a full rebuild for sure. But I don't even think they have the assets to do kind of like that mini retooling that we try to do over the past couple of years. So this is it for the foreseeable future in terms of the Ovechkin contract is another couple of years, Backstrom's quote unquote sweetheart deal ends. You know, this is really the true window, but you got to ask yourself, the window really is just being a playoff team, right? Because they haven't shown an ability to be anything beyond making the playoffs, right? They haven't been a cup contender, at least haven't proven to be a cup contender the entire time Ovechkin has been here.
Neil, thank you, buddy. Good having you on the show. Good insight.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely. Check him out, Crashing the Net, this Thursday night with Tom Daly. You're on 106.7, the Fan ahead of Game 4, I believe. The game is at 7:30, so you guys are on at 6:30. Very cool. Full hour with those guys ahead of the pregame show here on The Fan. Grant and Danny next. Redskins visiting with two marquee names in this draft class. Daron Payne, who you really like from Alabama.
Love him.
Darius Geis is the second-best running back in this class who could be available right there as well. Bigger need, D-line or RB? We'll debate that next on The Fan.
Guys, Grant and Danny for our pals at EMP180 Weight Loss. This is not an exaggeration. We have run into hundreds of people who are EMP180 weight loss clients, and they have lost 100 pounds, hundreds of pounds. I saw a sign this week for my check-in GP, over 6,000 pounds lost this year for EMP180 weight loss clients. It's awesome. They've got a plan for you. Grant, I'll tell you about it. It will work for you because it's worked for us and hundreds of our listeners.
The first thing that works is the structure. You've got a plan. It's all mapped out. Second thing is the accountability, like school homework, work deadlines, all accountabilities. With EMP180, you know each week what you've got to do, and you're going to meet with a nutrition coach at EMP. They're going to help keep you on track throughout the week. The third thing they provide is an education. You cannot unlearn what you learn at EMP. We are smarter about food than we used to be. I know so many things now when I go out to eat at restaurants that I didn't know before. It stays with you forever. You learn how to eat for you and what foods work for you as fuel. It's important to note the results. On average, men lose 3 to 5 pounds per week. Women lose about 2 to 3 pounds per week. Pretty amazing, and that weight stays off. You got to go to emp180weightloss.com, emp180weightloss.com.
Give them a call, 855-888-0180, and schedule that consultation today.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. This is The Fan. On Twitter, you can vote on my poll at Grant H. Paulson. What'd you vote for?
I did not vote for endless positivity.
Okay.
I voted for realism.
So we're asking you what you guys want out of the show tomorrow with the Caps playing Game 3, the Wiz playing Game 2 in the playoffs. Would you like us to be positive with an it's our day mentality? Or would you rather us be realistic and very cynical? 75% of you are looking for realism and cynicism. 25% of you just want a positive radio show to listen to for a few hours.
And there are times, and I understand this, by the way, because I used to, you know, when I'm leave here, I'm just a consumer like everybody else. I listen to the radio like everyone else does. And there are times I fully understand, you know what? I can't do it today. I can't hear the negative Nancy talk today. I can't listen to Danny bitch and moan and kvetch about another DC sports team letting him down. I get that. But all we can do is be honest. I think that's what we should be, is honest.
Yeah. I think what's good is we have differing opinions. So my honesty generally on a game day is, we got a shot at this thing. Series isn't over yet. I'm not worried about the rest of the series. Because what I do, I alter my expectations without giving up hope. And that's where people, I think, don't understand sometimes how I feel. Like, I'll get all these tweets over the course of a game. Now do you understand why we're not confident? I've never said you should be confident. I've never said you shouldn't be nervous. The difference for me is I'm able to expect my team not to win and get devastated and still have hope that maybe they'll win this time. And that's kind of what I'm looking for. By the way, Tailgate Ted has a great tweet here.
It's a good zing.
He says...
We can't say it, right?
I think we can. Can we not? Should I not say it?
I don't know. It's one of those borderline ones.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess I won't
Checking.
Say
Checking.
I thought... Are you going to look at it, Tom? Let us know.
Give me the thumbs up
that.
Or down.
I feel like we could definitely say that.
Why not? Just say it.
I mean, it's 2018. Right? It's a guy on Twitter saying something that we're reading. Tom's going to give it a look for a second.
Right, give it a once over. By the way, our life is in his hands.
So true. Dom determining the fate of the Grant and Danny radio program.
Her life is in your hands, dude. Her life is in your hands. Mr. Lebowski asked me to repeat that. Her life is in your hands.
Dom, I need a verdict here. What do you got?
I think if you read it the way it's written, I think it'll be okay.
Yeah, okay. That's what I was going to do. He says, please don't serve us an S sandwich tomorrow and try to convince us it tastes good. Just give me the facts and then take away my shoelaces and belt.
There you go.
Are you okay over there?
Yeah, I'm fine.
You uncomfortable?
No, I'm good, man.
All right, we'll move along.
All right.
Redskins have two guys in town today for top 30 workouts. Darius Geis, the running back from LSU, and Deron Payne, the defensive tackle from Alabama. Payne, the D tackle in the SEC, is considered one of the best defensive linemen in the country. He is not going to go in the top 15 very likely, you know, like a Vita Vea may. He's kind of the best of the rest after the top couple tackles are off the board. But he's a guy that the Redskins could either reach for and grab at 13 if they love him, or they could move down 2, 3, 4, maybe even 5 picks and potentially still get him and pick up some extra selections, maybe get that third rounder they lost in the Alex Smith trade. Geis is the second best running back in the class behind Saquon Barkley. He ran a 4.49 40-yard dash at the combine.
That was faster than I thought, man.
Absolutely. You realize he's 5'10 and 215 pounds.
Yeah, so he had an injury-plagued final year. His real great year was 2016, where he was unbelievable.
When Leonard Fournette got hurt in his draft year, and Geis basically just dominated the SEC, put 1,200 yards and 11 touchdowns on the board on 230 carries. I was also a good pass catcher, like around 20 catches for 150 yards or so. Was a former five-star prospect at a Baton Rouge, All-State, I think, back receiver, did a little bit of everything in high school, not surprisingly. But great prospect now. So I ask you this, Danny. I know you're out on the idea of a running back at 13.
Right.
Do you agree that running back is a big need for this team?
No, I agree that it's a need. I'd like several other things filled and improved before I get
I'm not asking you to rank it with anything else, just on a scale of little need, big need, upgrading at running back in the draft if you have like unlimited picks, you would still not say it's a big need.
I still would not say that.
Wow. I think it's a huge need.
Because I'm fatalistic about Jay Gruden, his offense is in the running game.
Okay, so it's not about their personnel. It's about the fact that you think they could have Ezekiel Elliott and they still not run the ball.
You could put a Rolls Royce in there and you still have to go around the cul-de-sac. Like there's no reason to get a Ferrari.
Which gets us back to one of our key disagreements on the Redskins running game, which is I am a huge believer that if you have a really good running back, your running game gets a lot better. Whereas you view it more dependently as if they just can't run the ball no matter what.
I think that's where they are. Now, I'm not a crazy person. Well, I am, but not about this. I think if they got a better running back, they would run better. I'm not that stupid to say that there'd be no improvement.
But not well enough to justify the pick.
That's where I'm at. To me, the juice is not worth the squeeze there.
Is it a quantity or quality? In other words, you don't think Jay Gruden will run the ball enough as a play caller to justify it, or you don't think when they run it, they'll be successful?
Quality. It's that one. Because he's been top half of the league in rushing attempts a bunch. His first down runs, he loves calling them. They hate being effective at them, but he loves to call them.
Too much for me, yeah.
So many one or negative one or whatever the hell else, and now you're in a bad down and distance. I think it'll be helped a little bit by Alex Smith and some of the ball handling that he has, the play fakes and the misdirection and those things. He's a master of that. That's something I hope that they use an awful lot. I hope that because he's so damn smart, Alex Smith gets him into some better sort of play calls, get the line of scrimmage quick, figure out, hey, we might have more success here, unbalanced this, that, or the other thing. To me, though, it's one of those, if you take a running back at 13, I think that is the ultimate refusal to acknowledge where you actually are.
That, or is to me, it just that, you to me, taking a player at a position of major need? You could, I mean, again, you don't view it that way, but I think a lot of people do.
I think they do. And this is why I'm worried. I think Darius Geis is on the table there because I think they're going, we're actually pretty good everywhere else. You watch this. We're good.
That would be insane.
We're good at corner. Watch, when we get Jonathan Allen back, we're good to go. We didn't need Muhammad Wilkerson. We didn't need Sheldon Richardson. We didn't need Don Terry.
Well, they've also, as we've talked about,
we're golden.
They're putting a lot of eggs in some injury-riddled baskets.
I know.
Like, oh, we're set at receiver. We signed Paul Richardson, who always gets hurt. Hey, we're set at defensive line because Jonathan Allen comes back. He and Matt Ioannidis missed time last year.
Yeah, and injuries, why Allen slipped down in the draft. And Jordan Reed, by the way, their most important offensive player
on the team.
Couldn't be, hurt more often. And now I guess he's training differently, so I'm sure we'll be fine. I've read that story before, thanks. I'm sure he changed his diet, best shape of his life, blah, blah, blah. No, thank you. He's already going to miss OTAs with his toe thing. This is so dangerous to me. You can upgrade, take a page out of the books of the teams that are perennially successful. Top 10 defenses go to the postseason. They make everything else better. Where does that start? Interior pressure. If you got your theory on pass rushers, if you got four, you need five. You got five, you need six. That's where I'm on defensive linemen. I can't.
So are especially the Eagles, who are the defending Super Bowl champion.
Yeah, especially in that 34, you need ballers up there. You can't just have guys. I've seen what it looks like with just guys. God bless the dudes that are still working in this league, and God bless the A.J. Francis's and the Ziggy Hoods of the world. No, thank you. I need ballers up there.
Deron Payne, 6'2", 311 pounds. Got length to keep guys off of him trying to block him with 33-inch arms. He's a big, strong kid. I think he threw up 28 reps at the combine.
He's only 20.
And he's uber athletic. There's a lot of growth ahead of him. I don't mean body-wise, which is going to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
But as you said, maturation and just coming into his own because he is so young, getting drafted in the middle or late part of this first round. So let's pose this question for you guys next at 800-636-1067. Of the two marquee names at Redskins Park today, who would you rather the team draft? Darius Geis or Deron Payne? Assuming, let's say, they stay put at 13. Because if you task me with the question of, would you like to move back a handful of picks and take Payne and some draft picks or Geis at 13, I think it's a no-brainer.
Right.
It's Payne. I personally would go Payne over Geis anyway. But I think there is some question if he's a three-down player. In the same way that there is about Vita Vea, and that's why he could slide a little bit, Payne is not quite the same upside or ceiling as Vita Vea and has some of the same questions. You could be taking a guy in the middle of the first round that ends up being a second or a third round talent.
Which would be frustrating, but it would still help you some, I would say.
Oh, it's, right? I would take that over Cullen Jenkins.
Yeah.
I would take that over, no disrespect, Ziggy Hood, but Ziggy Hood. I mean, I'm ready to get younger and more athletic at that position, and he provides those two things without question. We'll take your calls next. 800-636-1067. Skins have two of the best players, biggest names in this draft class and positions of need in their building today. Which would you rather have start a next season?
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
In Payne or Geis, we're Grant and Danny. I'm Grant. He's Danny. This is The Fan. 10 minutes from a double play, 25 minutes from a Beltway blitz. 1 o'clock, Candace Buckner on the Wizards, who find themselves down 1-0 in their best of 7 series with the Toronto Raptors. Game 2 in Toronto tomorrow night. Game 3 in Columbus for the Caps and the Jackets. Caps down 0-2 in their series. Right now, talking Redskins, biggest need is defensive line. I think most of us agree with that. Certainly defensive help, getting an impact starter, and someone who can really improve this defense in their first year in Washington. But is Deron Payne that guy? Deron Payne is in the building today, the Alabama defensive tackle, who's 6'2 and about 310 pounds. Birmingham native, meeting with the Redskins, could be the pick at number 13 overall. You could move back a few spots and get him. They also have Darius Geis, one of the biggest names in the draft class, in their building as well. He could very well and easily be available at 13, probably will. They could draft him there and solve their running back problem. Ran a 4.4. 40-yard dash is a 212-pound muscle man.
Yeah, he's quick and has some change of pace and leaves guys in his wake. He's a good football player, guys.
I posted my second poll of the day, believe it or not, on Twitter.
You're Grant Paulson today, brother.
Asking people, at Grant H. Paulson on Twitter, Geis, Payne in the building, who would you rather draft? Pretty close, actually, through 200 votes.
Let me change that.
55% are saying Deron Payne. 45% are saying Darius Geis. We'll break down our answers in a second. Lamar's in Oxon Hill to get it popping. What's up, Lamar?
Hey, how are you guys doing today, man?
Good, man.
Love your show, man.
Thank you.
I would take Geis because it just seems that we always draft a guy and we say, well, this is what we needed. And we let superstars just get drafted by someone else. This is the chance of I think to get Clint Fortis, a guy who can hold the chains for us. And the best way to keep a good offensive team from scoring on us is us holding the ball. And we haven't had that since Clint Fortis left. So I think this.
Let me
be
ask
a great
you this, because I actually think your point's great that you want to talk about improving the defense. Doesn't just have to be drafting a defensive starter. Running the ball better and getting a horse of a running back can help you do that as well. So I think that's smart, Lamar. But will they run it enough under Jay Gruden and have enough rushing success to justify the pick? Because that's the question Danny and I always come back to.
I think he will if it's working. And I think it hasn't worked because our running backs are just running backs. This is an impact running back. And as far as the defensive line, I was looking at the guys who are going to get drafted in later rounds. B.J. Hill with NC State, Settles with Virginia Tech. They're guys we can get that can help us stop the run. Deron Payne is a freakish defensive lineman who can stop the run, rush the passer. I just think that when you pass on an impact player like Geis, you're still sitting back. Now you're having a whole lot of three and outs. And I think that's been our problem.
It's a good phone
Thank
call.
You,
Thank you. I really like Tim Settle, the nose tackle from Virginia Tech. I believe we're going to have him on the show in the next couple days.
Oh, nice. That'll be fun.
Big fan of his, and I think he could be a nice mid-round target. I do tend to agree with him, though. I think Jay would be more committed to the run if it were more successful. I think part of the reason that he hasn't been is, as you say all the time, they're not good at it. It's hard to keep doing something you're not good at. And I think the biggest reason they haven't been good at it, the number one reason, is the quality of their running back. Number two reason, for me, has probably been tight end blocking, to be honest with you, at the outsides of the line of scrimmage. Number three is interior play, because Scherff's the only guy at center, guard, that has consistently been a wrecking force and a dominant figure over the last couple years.
I wish I was smarter in terms of X's and O's to be able to tell you why. I just know that everywhere Jay Gruden's been in charge of offense, they haven't run effectively, despite attempts in the top half of the league half of those times.
But he's not even that involved in their running coordination, to be honest with you. They brought in Bill Callahan. You know how much they pay that guy?
A lot of money, like an assistant coach.
They pay him more than like some offensive coordinators.
And still somehow it doesn't work. So I think there's a systemic thing. And I'm not going to beat my head against the wall anymore about it. His point on Geis, and you guys have said this, yes, it would absolutely help the defense if the Redskins possess the ball 40 minutes a game. I'd rather help the defense by helping the defense. I understand that.
Me too.
I mean, You can say this is an ancillary benefit of that, and that's all well and good. It's like lowering your cholesterol by jogging. Well, you get a bunch of other things, benefits from jogging. You know what I mean? I want the defensive player because that's what has to happen to improve the defense. I like the secondary thinking, and that's all well and good. Maybe you can help the offense by getting them some turnovers. Maybe you can help the offense by getting some sacks and better field position. To me, and this is the thing that you and I will probably disagree on, I think there's even more to Deron Payne's game. I think this is a guy that played with A'shaun Robinson, Jaron Reed as a freshman, playing with Jonathan Allen as a sophomore. His role increased each of these last 3 years. I think all he did was basically take on double teams in Nick Saban's system. I think there's pass rush to that guy's game.
I
think there's disruption
that.
To his game eventually. I think if the Redskins ended up with him, let's say they had to stay at 13 to take him, I'd be happy. If they traded back to get him, I'd be thrilled.
So 13 is early for me to grab him.
And I get it.
And I'm not going to hate it because it's a defensive starter. That's all I want out of that pick. Their first-round pick has to be a defensive starter. If they get a defensive starter, I will be content. If they were to get a Roquan Smith or a Tremaine Edmonds or a Derwin James, I'm going to be elated.
Sure.
I will be giddy and euphoric and joyous. If it's Deron Payne at 13 when I think you could move back and get him a few picks later, I'll be fine. I'll be whelmed. I won't love it. But do you know how many sacks he had this year?
It's not many. I think he had like four.
One.
One.
He had one sack. Do you know how many sacks he had last year?
Not many.
Take a guess.
One.
One and a half.
Zero. Okay.
He has three total sacks in like 35. Let me see. 27, 8 is. Yeah, 35 college games. Three total sacks at Alabama. Now, like you, I think there is more pass rush in his game. I think he was asked to do some different things than he will be in Washington. But my question is how much pass rush in his game? Is this a run stuff? Look, if you're an athlete going in the first round, you better be able to rush the quarterback a little bit. I'm sure he's able to rush it a little bit. But is he going to be better than Anthony Lanier on the first third down of the season? I don't think so. And to me, that's what you need when you're drafting a guy just outside of the top 10.
A disruptor.
Yeah, you better be better than Anthony Lanier on the first third and nine of the year at getting to the quarterback from the 5-tech spot. Matt Stafford, what's up?
Hey, I'll be going with the running back, guys, because you got only such a limited amount of time with Alex Smith. And Geis would be like his best friend and throwing passes to him. first and second down, setting up the chains for good third down yardage. So it takes a while to develop a defensive lineman. So he needs something now, and that would be the running back.
Thanks, buddy. So you clearly are out on Geis. Like, mm-hmm. You'll be mad if they take him, correct?
Furious, yes. Okay. Livid.
I am – I don't want to say I'm out. I will not be happy because he's not a defensive player, but he is going to be an asset and a huge contributor to the ball club, and so I will feel fine about it. But, again, the goal should be defense. Let me put it this way real quick for mm-hmm. you. I'm going to give you names versus – Payne, because I feel like you always talk about De'Ron Payne. I feel like he's like one of your favorites.
Yeah, I really like him.
So I'm going to throw some names at you. You tell me that guy or Payne.
Okay.
At 13. Roquan Smith.
Smith.
Tremaine Edmonds.
Edmonds.
Derwin James.
Derwin James.
Vita Vea.
Payne.
You like Payne over Vea.
I do. The more I've delved into this, the initial blush is they've never had a nose tackle in this 34. It's been a bunch of guys that just sort of have to wear it for a little while. Then they do their 4-3 bit. And Vea would certainly fit that bill. The more I've started to like to read and go in depth on this thing, my mind is kind of swayed to De'Ron Payne.
15 tackles for loss, 9.5 sacks for Vita Vea last few years.
Yeah, grown up, man. This is not a disparagement of Vita Vea. Like if they run up with that card and it says Vita Vea on it, and that's who ends up being a Redskin, you're not going to see me be pissed off or anything. I wouldn't be ticked, but I've grown to fall in love, I think, a little bit more with De'Ron Payne.
How many tackles for loss at Alabama last year for De'Ron Payne?
It's not many. I'd say five.
One.
One. Mm.
His numbers are not good.
They're not. I think
he had one tackle for loss and one sack last year.
And I know I'm arguing against the thing I usually argue for, which is if you're going to take somebody that high, they better have been really productive in college. Like, I can't stand Josh Allen because he was bad in terms of some of his numbers, like Jake Locker was or whoever else. I know what I'm doing. I just kind of can't help it with him. Something about how physical he is, how strong he is, how I felt like he just did the unselfish thing and just wore it, where he's taking on double teams, just dealing with it, letting other guys, the Rashad Evanses of the world, just flash and fly to the football and make plays. I think if he's one-on-one, you'll start to see some things from De'Ron Payne. But, that's my own bias.
Your double play, what's going on in our lives, nothing to do with sports, is next. We're about 15 minutes away from a Beltway Blitz, three teams in town you care about. One segment on Grant and Danny. I know you've got a story to tell, so I'll make this one fairly quick. This was sent to me by Brendan Darr. This will leave you with a lot of questions.
Okay.
Certainly left me with many questions. What's the longest, by the way, you've gone without eating or drinking, do you think, in your life?
Ooh, good question. I had a doctor thing that I had to do where it's like don't eat or drink beforehand. So probably like 20 hours,
and you were sleeping, I would say, for a good chunk of that
time. Yeah, some
of that
was sleep, yeah.
Get this. Someone went missing on Saturday in PG County, and this victim, as we would later find out, of a car accident, had been missing from Saturday until this morning when he was found just before 8 a.m. The family filed a missing persons report with the PG County Police. So here's what happened. There was a broken, busted guardrail off of Indian Head Highway. You're familiar with 210?
Yeah.
In Maryland?
Mm-hmm.
I take it all the time going back to King George because I take it down to 301. Well, there was a guardrail that was busted up and broken, so I guess there was a bunch of calls about this, and they went and investigate and look at it this morning for whatever reason, just before 8 a.m. The crew was called to check on these northbound lane guardrails near the Beltway this morning, and when they arrived at the scene, they found a car down an embankment with a person inside. That person had been in that car since Saturday when they got in the car accident.
Oh, my God.
Can you imagine?
No.
So here are some of my questions. Number one, if you're conscious, I guess you have to just be severely injured to the point where you can't move, maybe? But how is it that from Saturday to Monday you would go without the ability to get out of that car? You would have to just be immobile, I suppose, right?
Must be. And also, you're probably hurt, right?
Well, that's
like
what
if,
I'm saying.
If, yeah, if you've got like a broken arm and you can't like reach across and undo the seatbelt or something like that. Man, can you imagine that?
So this person, with cars whizzing by all day on Sunday.
Yeah.
From Saturday night, I guess.
You can't, like, honk your horn for attention? That's unbelievable.
Couldn't do anything. So I suppose they just sat there, and I'd imagine for at least most of the time were awake and conscious.
Great deal of pain, probably.
Can you imagine?
No.
That is frightening.
No.
And it's sad, and it's crazy.
This isn't like rural Route 9 either. This is like civilization.
This is right off of apparently 210 near the Beltway. So my point is there are thousands of cars every hour passing by there. And again, all you see, because there's an embankment, you just see a busted up, damaged guardrail. You don't see the car, clearly. It's down the embankment. No one was around, I'm sure, when they went through the guardrail. But I'm thinking, you know, for that long, you must be injured enough that you can't move. I'm wondering, are you upside down the entire time, perhaps? Or
have to
are you
be.
Just sitting kind of comfortably in your seat in pain from the injury?
I would wager it wasn't comfortable. I would wager it was pretty
awful.
No,
what
awful.
I'm saying is sitting in your seat, sitting up, just staring straight ahead. Like, is the car upside down and flipped? I have so many questions.
I have so many questions.
But you could write a book about that.
How was the car discovered? I mean, there's your movie. I mean, that's the
Call
James
the book,
Franco
33
movie.
33 hours or whatever.
Yeah. My God. I hope that person's okay.
Yeah, me too.
What do we know?
It's insane. I don't think we know. I think it's one of the many questions that we have. It is time for your double play.
Far less important, but I would say more trivial all at the same time. Every stand-up comic, of which I am one, has a story or dozens of stories or incredible experiences that, you know, kind of hone your will and kind of steel you against adversity, if that makes any sense. Early on in your comedy career, you'll have a bad show and you'll wear that for a while. Now it's to the point where you have one that's kind of a funny story. Comics don't remember times they've done well. Just like in Rounders, everybody remembers their bad beat or gambling things that they've lost. You always remember your crazy stories, right? I had a fun show this weekend. Thanks to the folks at Bretton Woods Country Club in Yermantown, Maryland, for having me. A lot of fun. They had a 90s party there. And I did a stand-up set for a semi-willing crowd. It was fine, whatever, had some fun. 30 minutes into my set, I'm doing 45. 30 minutes in, a woman who I didn't know, hadn't really been part of the crowd, walks directly from the back part of the room onto the stage, waves me over, gives me the kind of, hey, come here, listen to this. Thinking like there's an emergency. I'm thinking there's some sort of dire situation where there's a gas leak. There's for some reason, anybody that is going to walk onto the stage area and tell you something.
How far out onto the stage did she get?
The entire way.
She came all the way to you.
All
you
the way to me. I didn't meet her halfway because I noticed this was, she's walking towards me, still walking towards me. Oh my God.
And you're mid-sentence.
Yeah. 2 seconds before delivering what would have been a punchline in one of the jokes that
did
I have.
Did you make her part of the bit when she came out? Like, oh, here's a little lady.
No, not initially, because again, you're so alarmed at the disruption that you simply can't believe it. If anybody's going to do that, it must be serious. It must be something grave and hugely important.
So what are
important.
You thinking?
I'm thinking I need to, we're going to have to evacuate the building.
We're announcing a fire. Something's going on.
There's some kind of attack at the Bretton Woods Country Club in deep Germantown, Maryland. She comes up to me, waves me over. I kind of put the mic aside. She gets right in my ear and goes, would you mind making an announcement that I'm doing caricatures down the hall and anybody can come for free and get their caricatures done? And then walks away. Walks away from me.
You're kidding.
I am left flabbergasted and stunned and humiliated.
You're kidding.
I am left remembering.
So you stopped your set to like hear her.
And I am left remembering.
Did anyone hear her on the mic?
No, no one could hear it. I'm left as a reminder, you haven't arrived. You're not special. Nobody cares. You're the greatest comic is infinitely worse than the worst rock star. You suck. No one cares about you or anything that you do. You are a waste of space. Your 14 years of stand-up have amounted to this woman thinking of you as a 45-minute announcement maker. You're up there to make public address announcements like you're on the mic before school starts and you're telling people where to go for six-period gym class because the floor is wet.
Do we know, though, was she watching enough to know you were doing stand-up comedy, or did she just think you were like saying, hey, guys, welcome? Do we know what she knew about you?
In her mind, I believe this is my deduction. She believed that I was just somebody up there making announcements to an unwilling group of people for an extended period of time.
Were people laughing the whole set?
No, because half the people were talking among themselves. Half the people were
You're
entertaining
kidding.
Themselves. No, I mean, it was...
Where does this rank on your lowest moments in comedy?
It's now right up there. It's now right up there at the top. I
mean, is there anything else that's worse that you can think of off the top of your head?
Yes, the worst show I've ever done was...
I mean, moment where she came out and talked to you. Has any moment worse than that happened?
No, that's the worst moment ever. That's the worst moment of my career. Because as someone, again, that's done this for 14 years, just coming off last weekend, I was at the DC Improv with one of my best friends in the whole world. And I drove down to Richmond for a sold-out show. Just a great run, a great time where you feel like, you know what, this is all worth it. All these things that we've done, all the roads we've traveled and all the bad shows we've done, you've arrived. You've done something special. This is really cool. You and your best friend who started 14 years ago in this little teeny tiny town have turned your whole life into being able to get paid to do something you love. Good for you, Danny. Not so good for you, Danny. One week later, it's a nice reminder you don't mean squat. Yes, Tommy.
How do you think Dan Ninen would have handled that?
Dan Ninen would have folded that right into his act, lied about his age, and made $1 million. Look him up, by the way.
How did you get back on track? We're late, but I got to know. After she said that, what did you do?
I used it a couple different times. Where just a reminder, they're caricatures down the hall. I told everybody what she'd said to me.
You did? You passed along the message?
Absolutely. I said, this is why the show's been disrupted. I don't remember what I was talking about. I don't remember what the punchline for this joke. But she's doing caricatures. If you want to go get one, now would be a great time. Walk away from me and leave me standing empty in this room.
How much disdain do you have for the woman?
Here's the thing.
How much do you despise her?
I don't blame her for being her.
You don't?
No, because all it did was remind me that, pointing at myself here, not special. Nothing great about this.
She was the draw. It wasn't Danny.
In her mind, the announcement maker needed to make sure the people were aware she was doing caricatures down the hallway.
By the way, 57% of you saying you want Theron Payne, 43% of you want Darius Geis at Grant H. Paulson to vote. Danny, that's hysterical. That is the best double play I've heard in a while.
Could you just remind people, make an announcement? I'm doing caricatures down the hall. That's what my career has come to, making announcements that somebody's doing caricatures down the hall. That's me.
Grant and Danny on the Fan, time for the Beltway Blitz.
Could you just remind people that said Brett Ford has wonderful deals? Could you tell people that right in the middle of your set? What's up, Danny Rouillet, for my guys at Ted Brett Ford? I love them. They don't care that I'm not a celebrity. They don't care that no one cares about me. They treat me great. I'll treat you great, too. Regardless of your lack of achievement in the entertainment industry, regardless of how far you think you've come only to be checked down and make sure your ego has been chopped like a tree in the wilderness to burn like the fire that you used to have for DC sports. There's my analogy. Go see my guys at Ted Brett Ford. You're going to get you a great deal on your trade. And that's the first thing they'll do. They'll treat you grand, like a conquering hero that you are. You get an awesome deal on your trade. Then you will get a wonderful deal on a outstanding Ford vehicle. Ford makes the cars. Ted Brett makes the difference. You owe it to him to check it out. Here's an example. I got a couple examples for you. Get a new 2018 Ford Explorer for only $24,500. Or up to zero, or get up to. How can you get up to 0%? I can't read. 0% APR for 60 months and $500 customer cash for that 2018 Ford Explorer. Go see my guys at Ted Brett Ford. They will treat you like an actual celebrity. They'll treat you great. They don't care if you're not one, like me, not a celebrity, not achieving, not doing anything special with my stuff.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.